This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on the Escape Hour, and this is Joy 94.9. What a fantastic radio show for our community. I'm here today, Russ Masterton, with Tad Lombardo, and the effervescent, I can never get that word, effervescent.
Effervescent,
yeah. The lady who wants a ring on her finger, Fiona Brooke, and she's going to introduce our fabulous guest today.
That's right. Today we are chasing the vine. I love that phrase, with the lovely Paul Bateman, who is here to talk all about wine and wine travel and why you should travel for wine. I mean, how many great reasons. Thanks for coming, Paul.
My pleasure, and what a lovely way to spend the afternoon.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Paul has even brought us in a beautiful bottle of champagne that we are going to share any minute. Thank you for that.
I've done that, A, to be generous, and thanks for the invite, but two, I can't talk about wine without getting thirsty. So in case you're the same, I thought I'd bring in a bottle of House of Arras Cuvée. It's a sparkling wine from the Tamar Valley, north of Launceston.
How wonderful.
Which I bought back in the overhead compartment on my flight on Cup Weekend.
Okay.
It's a long weekend, where it was warmer in Launceston by 3 degrees every day than it was in Melbourne.
So that was
cold,
it really?
That
That's
cold
unusual.
Cup day that you had here.
Yeah.
We had beautiful blue skies, drove around the Tamar Valley for 3 days, and I rated this sparkling wine really highly, so happy to share. And listeners, here comes one of the great sounds in life. Are you ready?
Oh, yay.
It's a boy. It's a boy.
Right.
Oh, hang on, I'll just go
breaking
get those
the rules.
Glasses.
So was that one of your your wine club trips down to the Tamar Valley?
No, I am in a wine club called the Good Mates Wine Club. We didn't think too hard about that title, but it works. No, I went with my partner, my wife, Shirley, and it was my third trip to the Tamar Valley in the last 18 months, and it's such a great trip for people who, like your listeners, are into travel.
Yeah.
You jump on a cheap flight, which you book miles in advance, 45 minutes down to Launceston, into a hire car, which is at the airport, and then half an hour from the airport, you're in one of the most unbelievably beautiful parts of Australia, that northern river part of Tasmania and the Tamar Valley and Piper's Brook, and then some of the best sparkling producers in Australia have cellar doors, and they're very generous and friendly, welcoming people. And you motor about and you fill the boot with wine. And we took luggage with us with no clothes.
Did you?
Or other than what we're wearing, we took empty cases so we could fill them with wine to bring back.
Oh, that's perfect.
So, yes, if you haven't been to the Tamar Valley, there's my plug. I'm not associated with the Tamar Valley in any way, but I think it makes beautiful, sparkling wines. But you can judge for yourself, which is what you should always do with wine. You've got a glass in front of you.
Yum.
Beautiful. It's really good for my throat.
Can we all do a bit of a ka-chink, ka-chink?
Okay, yep. Have a little cheers.
I'm hoping to.
So there you go.
We'll feel inspired to go to the fridge right now.
Well, it's after 12. Our policy is it's after 12, and if it's after 12, you can go for your life.
My dad has the same policy. He is so fun. If you get there, he's like, champagne, it's after 12.
Perfect.
He's a farmer. He just loves it.
Yep.
So I had a look at your website, and I loved the concept of this this wine club that you guys have, that you meet and you go on little wine trips together. One of the guys in the club is your brother, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And where's the next trip to?
We have finished meeting for this year, but next year we're off to the Yarra Valley to around the south and north of the Yarra Valley.
That'd be nice.
The year after that, we're actually planning and saving to cross the ditch and head to New Zealand.
Oh, fantastic.
For all the Pinot and Riesling that's coming out of New Zealand at the moment. We're in that group. We're all wine enthusiasts. We're not in the trade, but we're in a group because there are things you can achieve and learn and share in a group that you can't do on your own.
Right.
It's a great tip for anyone who's new to wine. If you're a little bit apprehensive about entering the world of wine, if you're not sure about what to do or how to go about it, there's strength in numbers. Get three or four people, preferably with a comparable income, so you're all happy spending
page.
Around the same, around about the same amount of money, and the same skill level, and that will embolden you in a way perhaps that travelling on your own doesn't.
But that's the thing too. I think the whole wine world can be quite intimidating for a lot of people who don't know much about it, but still might like it.
It is.
What would you suggest for people to sort of, you know, get around that and to be able to enjoy wines and not be too hung up over the fact that they might not have a lot of knowledge about it?
I mean, the first prerequisite with wine is to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. I was and still am to some extent one of those people. And I was at a cellar door about 15 years ago in Western Victoria with a friend who really knew his way in the world yep. of wine. And I kept saying things like, that wine would be wasted on me, or I don't know what I'm tasting there. And he pointed out that I'm a reasonable cook and I like food.
Yep.
And he said, that already puts you well ahead of the curve.
Mm.
If you can tell rosemary from thyme and marjoram, if you know blueberries from raspberries, if you know tropical fruits from dried fruits, you have a palate already.
Right.
When you go searching for those flavours and nuances in wine, all you're doing is referencing back to those flavours and tastes. He said you should give it a crack. And indeed, the wine on that occasion that I was really drawn to was far more expensive than the other wines, and I thought beyond my budget, and I gave him a whole lot of reasons why I wouldn't bother spending money on myself in that way. And his phrase was, you should buy it, save it for a significant birthday, and consider it an investment in yourself. Mm. And I often think about that very generous expression. Mm. That was the kind of hook that got me in. Once I'd bought it, I had a kind of reverential feeling towards this bottle, and it was like a lighthouse. It kind of drew me well into the future. It was a lovely start.
Have you opened the bottle yet?
I have. It was, in a way, it doesn't really matter what it was like. It'd be a terrible story if I told you it was cork. It was in Great Nick. It was a Shiraz from Western Victoria. I remember cedar, aniseed, blueberry, and I shared it with my friends. But the real, you know, that travel truth about it's the journey, not the destination.
Right.
It was those years in between where, as he predicted, I kind of got my life together, and the reward at the end of it was this bottle of wine. And that's such a common story in the wine world. People assemble around wine for births, marriages, deaths, celebration. I always think of Napoleon. He said you need champagne in victory and you need it in defeat.
True.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. You need it when you're doing a radio show. You need it. You need it all the time. But if you can share it, that's which wine tends towards. It's a social thing. In cultures right around the world, that's reason enough to get into it. But yes, there are lots of reasons why people are intimidated or alienated from the world of wine. I sometimes think one of the biggest ones is the wine wanker. There's a lot of pomposity and...
we all know one of those, don't we?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who will go out of their way to make you feel stupid, however subtly they do it. And a lot of people would be affected by that, regrettably, for life and decide, no, that's not for me.
Mm.
And in closing that door to wine, they're shutting themselves off from this incredible source of inspiration and joy.
Yeah.
But a wine enthusiast, which is partly too why I'm in a club, because these people are wine enthusiasts, they're people who don't see knowledge as a zero-sum game.
Right.
I win, you lose. They think there's enough knowledge for everyone. They're interested in sharing. They're generous in their disposition. And they want what's best for you, and they will help you learn. And to the extent I know anything about wine, it's because people were generous with me.
Yep.
And I write about wine now because I just want to help the next drinker, basically.
And I guess the important thing, too, is that with every wine or every, you know, producer, there's a story behind that as well.
That's right.
Which makes it all that much more powerful.
Oh, and the story, too. I mean, not only of the producer, but of the soil and of the land, the climate.
Yep.
I mean, as you quite rightly point out, Paul, in your blog, and when you were writing to me by email, is that all the most beautiful wine regions happen to be in the world. Happen to be beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Is there a wine region that's unattractive
that's right.
You wouldn't want to visit?
No, I don't think so. I've never seen one.
That for me was a huge hook.
Because you don't remember them.
Into the world of wine. I travelled a lot when I was young, and you know that awful period you have when you come home after sustained and liberating travel and you fall into a slump and there's not much you can do about it because you've got to go to work or you've got to pay the rent or you're starting a family or you've got obligations or who travels forever in any case. And you spend a long time wondering, what am I going to do about that? And then slowly you stumble across the concept of travelling at home.
Mm-hmm.
I realised wine was a good way to get me out of my head and out of the house and back into the world, however temporarily, you know, for an afternoon or a weekend away. But every time I came back from a wine store or a winery or a wine region, all of which, as you say, are drop-dead gorgeous, they always plant grapes in the best parts of the world, I always felt that expansive sense of life again that I had when I travelled.
Yeah.
And I've remained hooked on wine in part because it always feels like a form of travel, and that's a lovely sustaining memory for me.
Wow, that's a beautiful idea. Yeah. I mean, I know certainly that with the increased amount of Pinot Noir that we're consuming, I mean, Pinot is a grape that is, I'm hoping that I can say this correctly, but it's the one that exhibits the closest sort of sense of the soil and where it came from, where it was grown, than many other grapes.
It can certainly do that. It's a very expressive grape. It's a delicate grape, but its flavour aromas are quite profound. You may have noticed in high-end restaurants, when they serve you Pinot, they'll put it in very wide-brimmed, expansive glasses. And what they're trying to do there, it's not all just for show, they're trying to get as much surface area of the wine open to oxygen to release the aromas. Because whereas with Cabernet or Shiraz or hardy, say, Italian-style wines, you may commonly associate four or five aromas with that grape. Pinot's dazzling in that I think I've counted up to about 20 different flavours, and I'm sure I'm well short of its full potential. But it's a savoury, lighter-bodied wine, and for people who are starting out, including myself when I started, I would never have gravitated towards that style of wine. Your palate is a little bit like a child's palate when you start out with wine. If you give a child an option between a sweet thing and a sour, they'll eat the sweet and spit the sour. And when you go to a winery, and certainly me 15 years ago in that cellar, the wine I was attracted to was a big, bold, sweet red wine because that's what my palate knew. But with lots of practice and lots of time, it's interesting that not just mine but all my mates, people I know who are into wine, their palates inevitably gravitate towards the lighter-bodied, savoury reds like Pinot Noir or the aromatic white wines like Riesling, for example. But there's no stage of the journey that's wrong. They're all natural, and some of them are all prerequisites for the next stage. So whatever wine you like, that is the one to start with.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
What's the right thing to do at wine tastings? Or not necessarily the right thing, but what do you do? What do you like to do? What do other people do? You know, because there's this spit bucket and you feel like you're an alcoholic if you just keep drinking and swallowing everything. But, you know, what's done?
Go with someone else. You need a wingman.
Oh,
don't go on your own. That can end messy. Leave the keys at home. If you can afford to buy bottles of wine at a cellar tasting, you can afford a taxi or an Uber. Pace yourself. You will never, ever have a hangover if for every glass of wine or every bit of wine you have a comparable amount of water. The downside, though, is I tried that once and I was up all night going to the toilet. But you won't have a hangover. And if you're presented with 100 different wines, don't try and drink them all. Pick the variety, the style of wine that you like, and learn about one variety well. You're better to drink 12 Rieslings, if Riesling is your thing, I think, than to drink one of 20 different varieties, because you're going to have palate fatigue by that point and you're going to be mixing such different styles that that'd be like making pies wearing boxing gloves. It's going to be really messy.
I find one of the things I do when I go into a restaurant, because they do serve so many wines by the glass these days, is I just don't plonk down for a wine. I just have a sip. I just say, can I try one, two or three? And then I decide what I'm going to have.
So you get a bit tiddly before it's actually time for the wine, do you?
Well, in some cases, of course, they do give you a reasonable taste test, a tasting. But in other cases, it's a dribble.
Okay, well,
but getting to that taste testing, have you ever sent something back?
I think I may have. If it's a bit frizzante.
Actually, I've only ever once in a restaurant had a corked wine, and that was a Chablis from the north of Burgundy. And I had planned my whole night around this bottle of wine. I knew it was on the wine list.
Oh, no.
I knew what I was going to order. I'd looked at the menu online. And in my food and wine world, wine comes first and I plan my food around it, not the other way.
Right.
So it was a profound disappointment when the last bottle of this wine that they had came to the table and it smelt like wet dog when they opened it.
Oh.
And there's no getting corked wrong. There's not, is it corked or isn't. If it's corked, you really immediately know it's corked.
Mm.
That's the only time I've had to send a wine back.
Right.
But you remind me about... trying wines that aren't necessarily in your normal palate range or of your interest, they're a good opportunity to push yourself when you go to a wine bar and drink just outside your comfort zone. So if, for example, you would typically order Cabernet, why not try a Malbec? If you'd normally drink Sauvignon Blanc, why not try a Gewürztraminer or a Grüner Veltliner? And form a relationship with the sommelier or the waiter or the man behind the bar or the woman behind the bar, and ask them, if I like this, what else would I also like? Sometimes you're going to taste stuff you don't like. That's not stuff you can send back because it's not faulty.
Right.
But that's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you push yourself. And you don't know. You might stumble across a variety you've never heard of that you are suddenly just in love with, and it becomes your new best friend.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. There's a lot of very descriptive terminology to talk about wines, like you just mentioned, wet dog. Another one is dead mouse. Like, who knows what dead mouse tastes like? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I've never heard that in reference to wine.
Yeah.
And Sauvignon Blanc and urine comes up a lot.
Oh, really?
Oh, so yes,
I'm going there.
Well, and now we're talking.
Hang on. So,
she's going from
or cat pee. Let's say cat pee. Don't tell me you've gone there.
For real.
And the reason, it's not actually imaginary, the chemical compounds that are common to the Sauvignon Blanc grape variety, there are, albeit in a minuscule form, comparable chemical compounds in cat pee. So if your palate's refined enough or your nose is strong enough, it's not a surprise that sometimes you'll get the most unexpected aromas with certain grape varieties. Pinot Noir that you mentioned before is famous for having truffly, mushroomy, earthy flavours, but it's a fine line between that and, muddy, pooey-like, really, really strong, offensive flavours. I kid you not.
Well,
we're hoping we're not going to have any of those experiences.
No, I don't think we will
again,
be.
Not
will
free
be.
At W.
In that case, you send the one back.
Yes, right. That's correct. Yeah. But now, Paul does a lot of travelling with his, you travel the world. We're going to talk in a little bit about some of your suggestions and recommendations for when you're about to travel on a wine trip.
Oh, yes.
But but I want to know, first of all, where's the most obscure place you've gone for wine? Somewhere that we wouldn't know.
Bali, Indonesia.
Wow.
I
didn't actually go there for the wine, but while I was there, I stumbled onto wineries and a wine industry.
Did you?
Yes. So,
God, that's incredible, because in travel week, the constant whinge about is you cannot get good wine in Bali.
The other whinge is you can get it, but you're buying the imported stuff, including Jacob's Creek, for example, from Australia.
But
you're
paying times the price.
$80 a bottle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is why you stick to the Bintang for $2.50 a bottle or $5 cocktail.
That's right.
However, bemoaning the lack of Balinese wine in a wine bar one night, a man behind the bar, a native local, heard me talking, came up and said, "With respect, sir, you're wrong. There are wineries in Bali. Wine has been grown here for centuries, commercially only since 1994 at a winery. Well, there's a number of them, but their big one is called Hatton in the north of the Balinese island. They produce sparkling wines, white wines, and a very, very good rosé wine from vines that flower and grow all year long. So we harvest once a year in the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere. These things are just constantly growing fruit.
That's fascinating.
In about, I think it's something like 6 or 12 week cycles. It's remarkable.
Mm.
They pick it and it grows again. We train a vine upwards towards the sky. They hang the vines from trellises, like a pergola system, to keep the grapes shaded. The workers who pick the grapes live on site in huts to shield them from the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they struggle with very sugary sweet wines because they ripen so quickly. But I found the rosé a really nice, refreshing wine. And while they're not exporting to Australia, you can buy it locally. And it's becoming a big thing in China, Indonesian wine. So
can you buy it in Australia?
You can. There are specialist wine shops.
Right.
I ended up, and I do this every time I hear someone's going to Bali, I ask them to buy me a few bottles and sling them a few extra dollars as a tip. But, look, it's not my go-to wine.
No.
But to answer your question about, you know, WTF, where did that come from?
Yeah.
8 degrees south of the equator was the last place I expected to find
half-decent
wine. But it's there, and it's a testament to the passion of wine people. These are people who took a punt on, they'd been to European destinations or the New World, drunk wine, thought, I'd love to try that here. And all strength to them. They've overcome every sort of climatic and geographical obstacle because they love wine and want to produce it and share it and find a market for it. I was in awe.
That's fantastic.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Here we are back on the Escape Hour.
We are here.
Oh, can you believe it? It's just such a great hour it's been.
It goes quick.
And we need to turn on some microphones so Fee can say something. Hello, Fee.
Not happy.
I just thought that, you know, that I'd have to start shouting and that would not make for good radio. I'd be shouting at you. So Paul's going to give us some travel tips about when you travel for wine. I mean, one person we want to really get on the show is someone to talk about the wine regions of Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where I believe they have 18 different colours of wine, right down to red wine, where they even have a black
wine. They do. They have a, well, it's, the wine itself's not black. It's made from a black grape. And they have a beautiful native grape, Saperavi, which comes from Georgia, an ancient grape that produces medium to full-bodied red wine. There is one winery that I know of in Victoria in the King Valley called Gapstead Winery.
I'm familiar with Gapstead.
Yeah, they grow and make a Saperavi that's beautiful. In fact, I'd pair it this Christmas, cool it down a little bit and pair it with turkey. But they also do a sparkling Saperavi,
which is
to die for. It's savoury, an absolutely beautiful
sparkling
wine.
Sparkling red wine gets a bit of a bad rap.
Yes, because it's, well, the Australian expressions of it, and we kind of pioneered it to some extent, is very sweet. A lot of it comes, when I was younger, I drank a lot of stuff out of the Coonawarra, and it was very sweet, bordering on jam. This is completely different. This is savoury, a little bit astringent, a gorgeous wine. Thank you for reminding me of it, in fact.
Well, I think that there's so many, I mean, as you mentioned before, you can travel in Victoria, in Tasmania. It's very close and you can experience the incredible wines that we grow here, so you don't have to go that far.
In fact, you don't even have to go that far. Here's some homework for people today who are listening and getting thirsty and want to travel in the world of wine. Walk out of the door, go to the nearest quality wine bar in your suburb. Make friends with the person who owns it on the assumption that he or she is a generous and warm person. Because if they are, they'll get to know you and they'll be interested in your wine journey, to use a popular expression. And they'll know that if you like Pinot, the next time you come in, they might recommend Gamay to you or something that stretches you a little bit. And then pick a country. Perhaps next year you're off to France or you're off to South Australia or you're off to California. Pick that region, sit in the wine bar and say, right, serve me up, even if they're just half serves. A lot of good wine bars will do a half serve of a glass. Let's say we're off to France. I want to drink a Sauvignon Blanc from the Loire Valley, some Cabernet from Bordeaux, some Shiraz from the Côte de Rhône, some sparkling. Take a friend, obviously. This is going to be a long afternoon. But you get the idea. You can actually, and I used to do this, you can pick a region, pick a country. You can even pick a region within a country. So Burgundy has Chablis in the north, the Côte de Beaune, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir in the middle, and then Beaujolais in the south. You can pick regions and even destinations within regions. And good wine bars will have expressions, more or less, of all those wines, and you can travel in that way. I kind of call that pre-travel preparation. But then, yes, you pick a country or you pick a region. There are over 90 countries in the world that produce commercial quantities of wine, but actually 12 of those 90 produce 80% of all the wine. So you're probably going to go to one of those 12, and conveniently, six are in what we call the old world, which is, European.
Europe, yeah.
So Italy, France, Spain being the really big producers, and of course Germany. Mm-hmm. And in the New World, Australia, Chile, Argentina, America, New Zealand, and South Africa. So, right. I mean, you can throw a dart at a map, and you're probably going to hit a wine-producing region. Georgia, for goodness sake, there you go.
Yeah.
This year alone, I've drunk wines from Lebanon, Cypria, Malta. I mean, there are countries, Denmark, countries really? All over the world, new world wines, I call those,
yep.
that are producing great wines. Pick a country, go. I would acquire just some basic knowledge of wine before you go, not because it's a necessary key to entry, so to speak, but it will enhance your experience if you have even the most fundamental grasp of how wine is made and what choices a winemaker makes when he or she is making their wine. If you understand which varieties have common flavours, so you often associate oyster shells with Chablis or blackcurrant with Cabernet. Once you know that, the only reason to know that is what do you like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So some regions of the world are better at those varieties than others. The Clare Valley is famous for Riesling, for example.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Margaret River for Cabernet. Burgundy for Pinot Noir. Mm. California for Chardonnay and Cabernet.
Mm.
Those kind of little bits of knowledge will help you pick a country that's suited to your palate and suited to your experience. But then, once you get there, travel as freely and as openly as you can. Seek out generous people of goodwill, and you will find, as I've nearly always found in the world of wine, wine wankers are far and few between, and mostly it's generous people who are very proud of the wine they've made through enormous effort and complexity to put in a bottle, and they want to share it with you, and they are wrapped when you're wrapped with it. Plus, at the end of the day, when all the talking is done, you sit down and you crack open a bottle of something special, or you bring it home. That's even one of the most wonderful things about wine travel. And you put it in your cupboard, and a year or two later you open it, and instantly you're transported back to the hills of northern Italy or to the sands of the Loire Valley. I mean, it's...
Well, you know, Paul, there's just so many places that we want to do an outside broadcast.
Yeah.
And, I'll be there.
We've been speaking to management for quite some time about that, but I think, you know, either Burgundy or the Loire Valley would be great.
Yeah, and, I think so too.
We'll have to invite you along. That'd be fantastic.
I was in the south of England, of all places, this year, drinking sparkling wine that was really good. And, look, it doesn't matter whether it's England or the Mornington Peninsula. Wine people, it's essentially an agricultural pursuit. So they're farmers, they're of the earth, they're connected to nature, they battle the elements every day. They really put their money where their mouth is. There's huge risk associated with wine. And I think they elevate fermented grape juice to art when they get it right. They really create something really special that, again, we choose to put on the table at the most special moments in our life. All those fears that you have, all those things that alienate you from the world of wine, put them aside, dip your toe in once again and set off, because it's a key that unlocks an incredibly joyful, varied, abundant world if you can pull it off.
Do you keep a wine journal for certain wines that
Well,
that
in
have
a sense, my blog is that. On my website is a collection of stories that I choose to tell about those moments where wine and life intersect in ways that are memorable or that matter.
If any of our listeners want to check out your website, where do they go for that?
I'd love it if they did. It's www.adrinkinthought, all one word, adrinkinthought.com.au.
Cool.
And all my various social media platforms are plugged into that site.
Oh, good.
And if they're drinking any wine today, send me a note and tell me what they drank and what they thought of it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, panel, I had a great experience last Sunday, and I went to Vudemont, which is, you know, a fabulous restaurant here in Melbourne. And I went for a friend's 50th birthday. Happy birthday, Jay. And now, I one of the things that I like about I was perusing their website, and they what we experienced was what was called their wine experience.
Yep.
And so I'd love to hear what you all have to say about this, that their motto at Vudemont is right wine, right glass, right pour, right dish. Wow. What do we think of that, folks?
As Well, right, R-I-G-H-T.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I think right glass is a really big one.
Yep.
Okay. Because I always love, I mean, obviously there is a reason why they give you fine glassware in good restaurants. Yep. Something to do with the wine tastes different. If the rim is thicker or thinner, I just love that magic.
Yeah. Mm. It makes a difference.
This is true. When you're starting out, frankly, I think you can drink wine out of a Vegemite jar, a clean one, obviously. But
a few of those.
Yeah, at the risk of saying that wine tends towards fetishism, yes, I definitely have invested in some good glassware and some decanters, and for really good wine, it makes a world of difference. In fact, can I tell the listeners that I bought in the wine glasses today to go with the wine because I thought it would be terrible if we're drinking that Tamar Valley sparkling out of plastic cups.
Oh, well, I was concerned.
Of course you could do it.
When you first came in, I was like, damn, we can't drink it out of mugs. That would not work.
Yeah.
Joy mugs, I mean, they're beautiful,
they're
but
nice,
I'm but not champagne.
No.
Yeah.
Coffee's
so
working.
We do appreciate that you went to the effort of bringing in these beautiful glasses.
What I would say, though, about right glass, right pour, I mean, that's all great. I would love a night like that. But when I started out, that stuff didn't mean much to me. And if you are starting out, don't worry if it doesn't mean much to you either. What matters is that you pick the wine you like, trust your own sensory perception, get in touch again with your sensory perception, because a lot of us are divorced from that, and then just keep dipping your toe in a little further outside that first circle. So again, if you liked Cabernet, then try something a little bit like Cabernet. Then try another thing a little bit like Cabernet. And then one day try it in different glasses and see what happens. Work your way up to something like that Vue du Monde experience.
Yes.
That's probably not something for someone starting out. And I don't mean that in a condescending fashion. I just mean don't be put off jumping in by something like that. Incidentally, of the wines you tasted that night, can you remember one that was really special?
Look, you know what? For me, it was it's
the 11th one.
I know. I'm looking at the list here.
What?
It's a lovely
Fiona,
list.
Would
of
you
wines.
Like to comment on that for me?
W.C. Fields, the humorous one, said it was only one wine made me drunk. I think it was the 19th.
Well, I think it was. And look, I was sitting next to my new friend Vita, who I wanted to say hello to, and Vita was trying to tell me all about the various wines and everything there. And you know, I don't know. It was a combination of the taste of the food infused with the wine. It is an incredible experience.
Yes.
And look, it isn't affordable for the average Joe Blow. It's something that that you need to save your money for because
it's a special occasion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Someone's 50th. But you know, it is an experience when you go to a place like that. Where you're up at the 55th floor of the Rialto. Yeah. You've got these amazing views of the city, and then you sit down, and you know, it's not only you know this wine experience, but it's also a food experience. And what this company does so well, this restaurant, is that they combine them both to a point where, you know, you think, oh my God, why am I spending this much money? But there is absolutely no regret once you've done it. It's absolutely spectacular.
Yeah. And look, two things. One, think of all the things you do waste money on. That friend who got me to buy the good bottle, he said you probably buy 3 takeaway coffees a day, every day, every week.
Yeah.
Just forgo those to get a good bottle. But secondly, it's that word experience. You've just bought an experience rather than a thing. And you'll be talking about that for a decade. Yeah. Well, what price do you put on that?
Nothing. Right. Now, Ted, you've got a message.
We
from
do.
Someone
we
fabulous.
Yep. It says, hi guys, what a fantastic show. Such great knowledge, experience, and advice about the world of wine. Feeling like grabbing a bottle out right now. Hugs, Eric. Thanks for writing, Eric. Hugs back at you.
Eric, please do go and grab a bottle and then pick one person you'd like to share it with, even if it's your neighbour. Just go and knock on their door.
Well, Fiona's free this afternoon, Eric, so we'll see you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour. What an hour it's been. We've been popping corks, haven't we?
Oh, look, we could talk about this wine for such a long time.
I'm just glad you swallow, Fiona. I really am about that.
I know.
I think that when
I always did too. I come in every week and I think, oh my God, here we're going to have to.
I always wondered.
Tate and I had often asked that question to each other. Do you think she does?
I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to clear the air.
Yes,
Thank you.
Important.
Thank you, Paul, for giving us the opportunity to clear the air.
What's that website of yours again? Can I just say that I went on there this morning and I loved reading the stories. It's a great read and everybody should get on there.
Yeah.
A drinkinthought.com.au.
It's been a pleasure having you on. And thanks for another great escape hour. We'll be back next week.
Thanks, Paul.
Happy drinking. Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.